Yes, unfortunately.
You're excited, I'm don't
started
lie.
Started again.
So this is episode 5 of... Well, we actually have a name now.
It's episode 5, but more like episode 1. Because we have decided on a name after... I had to think really long and hard about it.
You're a piece of shit because hey, David, come up with 30 options. I'll say no to all of them and then say yes to like the
right,
third one.
But I'm quality assurance of this podcast. It's I hold a lot of titles, wear a lot of hats.
So many hats.
I don't know which is the most important. Mostly I take all the clicks and buzzes out of the final product. But
that's a begonia, especially the creaks. I'm going to lean back on my furniture.
Yeah, there's a lot... It's weird because Dave's apartment is full of wicker, so I have a lot of work to do once, you know, in post.
It supports my back and bottom, and so, it helps me breathe.
Your chair breathes? Is that what it is? So, yes, we
have... Do you want to tell them the name?
Sure. After much consideration and a poll, a Gallup poll taken of the cross-section of America, we will from now on be known as the... Basement Dwellers Podcast. Nope.
Oh, you fucked it. I knew you would.
It's the Basement Dwellers Breakdown.
Yes. Podcast, because we have to make the website and stuff.
I already have a Twitter.
Oh, we're somebody now.
I haven't even told you. So I have the Twitter, and I have the basics of a Squarespace site all ready to go.
And even though the name has existed for like a minute, we're already going to be cool and just refer to it as the... BDB pod.
Yes. So that is actually the handle on Twitter.
And I got to always say it in my head first because I mix up B's, P's, and D's because of the dyslexia. So I just want to be like, oh, we're on the BDB pod.
Well,
follow us on Instagram.
It's not just you that makes those mistakes. It's the rest of the world. So you'll be okay.
Okay. So for this illustrious episode that we dragged our feet, it's been about a month because...
Well, right, because... There's the Thanksgiving holiday. There's all this stuff.
The crippling depression of getting the law degree and getting sworn in but being unemployed.
Exactly. It's very... Struggled getting out of bed. It was like, we'll do it at 11. Okay, 11:30. No, 12 would be better for me because I, like, just sat on the toilet, not doing anything, just with the water running in the shower as hot as it could be with the fan off, just sitting in a, you know, in a room of steam.
Yeah, and I have my hour and a half of I just wear a towel around my neck staring in the shower and just looking in the mirror going, not today. Not today.
You're lucky. If David's ceilings were high enough, oh boy, we'd have a funeral on our hands.
Well, this is a fun... All right, so we're talking about Doctor Strange today.
Doctor Strange.
Recently saw I saw it with you.
Yeah, we saw it...
opening day.
Opening day, but not really because the things that they do to us these days with opening day and not being opening day, it's like, it comes out on Friday, so first showing 8 p.m. Thursday.
Yeah. Or maybe, it used to be it started with the midnight release.
Right.
And I think my first big, that was relatively recent, because the first one I saw was Transformers.
Right. What happened to the days of going to see Avatar opening night on a Friday and it just being 3 a.m. by the time you're done, and you're like, I absolutely need to see that again because I'm asleep.
I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
And then they started doing the 10.
Right.
And I was like, okay, that, you know, that way you're out by midnight. It's technically opening day and I don't have to be home at 3 in the morning.
Right.
Now they're doing this 8, and even I've seen as early as 6:30. I'm like, that's not...
It just comes out on Thursday.
You can't be like, hey, we'll have a quick dinner and then go watch it a day early.
Yeah.
That's not opening day.
At some point, it's just... And I can't wait, but... I really struggle, and this will be our little pre-pod post-discussion.
Because that makes sense.
Right. I mean, we'll come up with a graphic for it and everything one day when this is on True TV. Because that's where you go. Like, if you need a pilot and no one will take it, True TV. Adam Ruins
They have
things.
Four shows about Bigfoot. Like, Bigfoot Hunters. On this episode, every time, like, are they going to get them? No.
Yeah,
because they'd open with that. How do you have four competing shows getting
Bigfoot?
It would
be on the news.
Where every one of them made it to its seventh season, and I'm like, it's just heavy men in the woods. Like, they've never shown anything.
So I've been... so first we'll talk about this, but then we'll talk about the movies. We'll get back to it in a second. But
already off
I've been watching... I watch a lot of History Channel before I go to bed because they put a lot of Pawn Stars and American Pickers, and I know that you hate both of those shows. I hate them in principle, but I love watching them. But recently, they've been showing reruns.
Pawn Stars. I hate American Pickers because they're monsters.
They're showing reruns of Hunting Hitler, leading up to like the newest episodes every week. It is the most fascinating show. Because
I haven't heard of it.
So basically, it's like they're like Hitler got away and he went to Argentina, and it's like family lives on somewhere in the world. But if you think about it, wouldn't that be the biggest news in the world? Like if they just like found Hitler or his family somewhere? Like
that needs to be like a 5-minute SNL skit of like this little kid in Argentina, and he's like, "Hey, like, how's it going?" And he's like, "I think that's Hitler." Like I think, like he shaved and he's wearing khakis, but. I think that's Adolf Hitler. Nah, he's dead. He died in a bunker.
Right, but it's like if Hunting Hitler, the show that is on new Tuesday nights or something at 10 p.m. on the History Channel, found evidence that Hitler escaped from Germany and was still alive, like it would be on. It would be the headline.
Is the prospect that he's currently alive?
No, because he'd probably be too old. He'd be like 100. But,
yeah,
like almost, but. The prospect is that he like escaped through this secret tunnel in the Führer bunker, and it's amazing to me. But it's like obviously they're not gonna find out anything. It's all gonna be speculation anyway. But at least with aliens, it's like everything's speculation.
Or maybe they just buried the lead. Like there's gonna be one episode of like, oh no, we actually have like, here's our alien.
Yeah.
And it's like oh wow,
we have an interview with an alien. How did this not get picked up by CNN? How did this not get picked? How did they save it for National Geographic 2? How did that happen?
It's just, you got to know the right people, man. Yeah. You got to get your foot in the door.
So, okay, back to the movies. I think one it'll just all be like streaming. You can watch it whenever. And I struggle with that because I love the movies, like going to the cinema.
Well, I think, yeah, because even the option of pirating a good movie, even some movies I've seen before, because, you know, right. Half the reason of going is, and like this movie especially, you want the large screen, the big theater,
the 3D, all that. And I think eventually it'll be more accessible where it's like, I can have a 100-foot screen, you know, in my house that's 4K with the Dolby, digital, IMAX, all that shit. But I still think I'd rather go see it at the movies, you know?
Yeah, what makes it an event.
Yeah.
And it's nice going with friends and having overpriced popcorn.
But the thing is that, I don't know. I would also like the option to watch it in my underwear.
That's nothing stopping you. It would take them at least 20 minutes before people noticed.
Yeah, it's very
got
dark.
Upset enough and got like some form of chauffeur to escort you out.
Well, the only thing that's actually truly ruined the movies for me a little bit is I'm terrified the entire time I'm there in the dark because of the Aurora shooting. Like every person, I'm like, how'd that guy get in with a backpack? What is he going to class? He's going to class Sunday afternoon. Okay, I don't know.
Okay. Oh, my nearest exit's 90 feet away down very narrow flights of stairs with a room of 3,000 people that are going to be panicking.
Yeah, I'm terrified of that. But, you know, it's not going to happen, but it could happen. I don't know. It didn't happen. We saw Doctor Strange and it didn't happen. We lived to tell the story
and now
die another day.
I'm going to rope you in. Okay, now we're on Doctor Strange.
Okay. Yeah, and you'll hear the sound effect. No, you won't. Okay. So, Doctor Strange, a staple in the Marvel Universe.
Do you want to get into the history of it before we do the movie?
Yeah, I think so, because I don't want to... I mean, the movie is new. It's still in theaters, wrecking the box office. And I don't really want to ruin it for people. So, I think we should talk about the history and then, like, vaguely go into the... So that they could skip it at the end. But don't skip it.
Yeah,
we'll tell you the story. Who is Marvel Studios anyway? Let us tell you the story of the movie.
Yeah, so we've talked about this before. I think one of the reasons this pod took a little bit longer because I especially like to do a little bit of reading and brush up on the characters. And, you know, we were doing Suicide Squad and all the other ones we've done. Like, those are, they're pretty big names we've at least read a little bit of.
Right, and also, like, Suicide Squad.
Or Fantastic Four. Like,
no one's like, oh, you need to read that. The game-changing Suicide Squad run. Like, it's not...
Boomerang solo run? Like, it changed my life. Tale of Two Cities, Captain Boomerang solo run, maybe, a Farewell to Arms, but we'll see.
Yeah.
But no, so Strange is... He's a character I've known, and he pops in and out, but he's, especially for being, because he's one of the most powerful characters in Marvel Comic Universe.
Mm-hmm.
And, but he's always does his own thing.
Right, because he's so different.
He does team up, but yeah, but because the hard magic, the interdimensional beings, demons, and he's always kind of his insular thing. And that's what I liked more about, not just the character, because the character's pretty good, but reading through a lot of the comics, and one thing, that's why I took some extra time in the recommendations this time, is if people are into like that more like the gothic and the weird, it's own, he's pretty much like his own genre.
Right. Like, he's not as much, because I don't think Marvel really has this option, and one day we'll have fans and they'll prove me wrong. But, you know, I feel like DC has like the Vertigo imprint that has a lot of those like dark occult things like Swamp Thing.
Yeah, DC Dark. And yeah.
All the Constantine runs. So it's like they have that.
And Endergan and yeah.
Yeah. All that. So I think Marvel, that's like their, it's some of it's dark in Doctor Strange, but he's more like a happy-go-lucky guy.
Well, yeah. So he, because he started. And there's
more comedy in it.
Yeah, because his first appearance was Strange Tales number 110, and that was by Kirby and Ditko, which is in 63, which is like 95% of all Marvel comics were
come from there,
Lee and Ditko, and it was based off. And I read the first issue, and then I've heard of Strange Tales before because I think it was also the birthplace of Nick Fury and some other characters.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 168 issue run from 51 to 68. And it was a horror anthology, so it was kind of a lot of just one-offs.
Yeah.
Marvel bought from Atlas Comics, and the Comics Code at the time, which there's a better episode for that, but...
Yeah, that kind of threw a wrench for, like, 80 years in comics. Not that long, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, like, Comics Code, like, for whatever reason, I think maybe because it was primarily marketed to children in the beginning, comics were super heavily... audited, scrutinized, and edited. Like I was looking at the Comics Code for the goth for that applied to Strange Tales. They banned all graphic horror, but they also banned any reference of vampires, zombies, and like a bunch of other monsters.
Yeah.
And I don't know what about the 1960s youth that would cause civil unrest if they saw a comic about a vampire.
Yeah. It's, you know, these are people who have, you know, just gotten over World War II, and they can't handle vampires. There's a line that you draw in the sand, and someday someone's going to cross it and be a groundbreaking hippie.
But, ever since the war, my dad drinks because of the mummy.
Yeah.
But so they had, and so for Strange Tales, it was like this like weird occult stuff, but they had to be a bit more creative because of how restrictive the comic code was.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be like, so they weren't demons. They were interdimensional beings,
right,
with horns. And like, they had to always make it kind of weird. So, and they based it off of an old serial from the 30s. It was like Chattiest the Magician. And it was just, so Strange was originally just like this weird magician. But then he got his solo run. It didn't go very well. And then they brought it back like 5 years later in the 60s. And it kind of picked up steam. And I think one of the things that I really like about the early 60s version that they copied a little bit in the movie, we'll transition in the movie, was, first of all, Ditko was definitely on acid.
Yeah. I mean,
he's openly talked about before about doing hallucinogens and like all throughout the 60s and 70s and how that kind of, you know, Steve Jobs, you know, a lot of these creative people, you know, Bill Hicks, Steve Jobs, like they talk a lot about how hallucinogens and other drugs affect the creative process.
Right. And we're even seeing more of that. I mean, this isn't a science podcast, but like they use hallucinogens, mainly LSD, to like treat other drug addictions now. And because it creates these, you know, pathways of thinking in your mind that you couldn't have seen otherwise.
So it's remember, like, kids, if you find LSD in your parents' house, take it. It cannot hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll have a fun time.
Yeah. Lick every old stamp. Find an old lady's stamp collection.
One out of 100 is going to be LSD. That's exactly a fact.
And it's got Mickey Mouse on it because all the drug dealers thought they were funny. And everyone told them they were because that's who they bought their drugs from, and you don't want to piss that guy off.
Yeah, it's like your boss telling a bad joke.
Yeah, you laugh. You laugh louder than you would if it was funny.
And it's like if your boss like awkwardly hangs around your apartment, it might stab you.
Right, and give him finger guns.
But because the early, it was really trippy imagery of like a lot of like fractal images and like kaleidoscope drawings, and that it definitely wasn't like the first uniquely artistic comic, but it was. It's always been off the beaten path of it. It's always really kind of, and that's a visual I'm really impressed they kept in the movie.
Yeah, definitely. They did it. That was always a main concern when you're talking about this, the mystical magics, because they're talking about it with the Iron Fist TV show that's coming out on Netflix in March, and you're also thinking about the Doctor Strange movie. This was really their first foray into the mystical side of Marvel Comics.
Well, and we'll talk about this in a second, but because the MCU actively has been avoiding magic.
Right. So they did a good job. I'll give them that.
Yeah. And so he's heart of the Silver Age of comics, because Silver Age is like 56 to 70.
Mm-hmm.
So it's he's definitely, Doctor Strange is definitely a byproduct of the 60s.
Yeah.
Of the drug-induced era where censorship was pretty high. And so they pretty much just about everything major from the character they got in the movie. He's New York native. He's from the Sanctum Sanctorum. And we'll talk about the origin and stuff when we do the movie, because they pretty much did it shot for shot. And then I just thought about some of the things he's always associated with. One of the big ones is the cloak of levitation.
Right.
Which they showed. And
is that true to the comics? Because I know in the movie it like chooses him. Is that kind of...
No, so it was in the comic, because... It's one of the first items he gets.
Right.
He got it like in 67, and it was originally blue, and then they changed it to red, but it was given to him by the Ancient One.
Okay.
I forget what he did. I think he sealed a demon, and she's like, here's a cloak. And in the movie, I liked how they did in the movie where it seemed to be like conscious, like it was its own entity, because it was attacking people, and he was like arguing with it, and it was like its own. It was like the carpet from Aladdin.
Right. It had like a sense of humor.
And I couldn't.
Like most cloaks do.
Yeah.
So it was more like when you're worthy, you'll get a relic, kind of like Mjolnir. And
yeah,
he gets it. You saw the trailer.
Yeah. So I couldn't really. So the biggie, I went through, because again, like I said, what I did at 4 a.m. was going through reading comics of all these items.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them, they're pretty standard. But then half the time, because comics is always about plot devices.
Yeah.
Like at one point, the big thing is that it lets them float and fly.
Right.
Right. It's in the name. But it's also really durable. And there's multiple issues of him trying to repair it. Like it takes a lot of magic and time to repair it when it does get damaged. And they have, like, this whole character of, like, Anthurion the Weaver who has to do it. And it's, like, this whole quest to get, like, a patch sewed. And
you couldn't bring it to your local Vietnamese tailor?
Probably my guy. He's really good.
Yeah.
But get Eddie on it. But it can shape... One thing I did like that they didn't do in the movie that they might do later on was that it could shapeshift into other garments, like a suit.
Okay.
Like the the symbiote. Like, that was...
Right. Because Doctor Strange lives in 2016 Manhattan now. So it's, like... Like, you stick out. Like, there are scenes in the movie where they're just running through, and people are like, what the hell is going on?
So I could see, I think that that'd be cool to do in the sequel, of having, like, be a suit and then transform.
Yeah.
And so it does, there were instances where it acts like an extra limb or upon the will of the wearer. Like, he had to throw a knife, and it would move. But I couldn't really see it being, like, its own consciousness.
No.
I didn't see that in the comics I read.
No.
I like it in the movie.
Well, like, the will of the wearer is, like, I have the will not to die. So it will block all incoming projectiles.
I get you. And so, the other big thing, because the two things he always has with him is the cloak of levitation and maybe even more so the Eye of Agamotto.
Right.
And this, there's a pretty big distinction between the movie and comic.
Absolutely. And we'll get into that, because that was something I did not like.
So, well, I did. Well, it makes sense.
It makes sense.
We'll get into that because this is, I don't mind it if they change things for the movie universe, because it's a different medium as long as the spirit's kept the same.
Yeah.
Because
absolutely.
Originally, Eye of Agamotto, it's like a wisdom device, and that's another one, though, where it just kind of does nonsense. Because originally, it lets the wearer see through disguises and illusions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it shoots like a beam, and it's like literally an eye of illumination. I get that. Eye, seeing, I gotcha.
Right.
And then it could also let you probe people's minds. And I'm like, okay, you know, see into someone's mind, like open their third eye. It was based on the all-knowing eye symbol of Buddha.
Right.
So I'm like, okay. And then like, oh, it also makes shields and portals. I don't really, and then like, oh, and by the way, and it can make, and it holds people in suspended animation and floats them.
Right.
And I'm like, that, now you're just adding shit to add it. Like, this doesn't make any sense.
So the Eye of Agamotto, I've had problems with that in the movie, and the whole, like, what is it, Turn Back Time? I don't know.
We'll get to the, because I got two more items that he uses a lot. The other biggie that he always has, and I think they reference it in the movie, I don't remember, which is the Book of the Vishanti, which, and that's always his, and we'll get to this because I kind of wish there was a little bit more of it. It is very much like the traditional concept of spells. He's constantly doing research and going through books. And
yeah.
The Book of the Vishanti is, that's like the penultimate, it's like the ultimate source of white magic.
Okay.
Which, you know, I think in 2016, all magic should matter.
Well, yeah, okay, I'll give you that.
But, and the other one, it was a bad joke, I thought.
Dave's smiling so big right now.
And the other one is the Orb of Agamotto, and that's just like his traditional scrying orb.
Okay, Agamotto's a big swinging dick of...
First Sorcerer Supreme.
Okay. Is it his actual eye? And his actual orb.
Yeah, it's gross. Where'd they get the orb from?
Oh, God. His butt. Yeah, from his butt.
It's from his butt.
So, those are the traditional... relics?
Yeah.
So, I wanted to talk more about... Can you give me a rundown of some of his, like, friends and companions? And because, you know, you get Mordo in the movie. And... the ancient one. So is that the entire lineage? Is like, so you always have an ancient one that's not a person?
No, well, the ancient one that was the character, that, but it was the Sorcerer Supreme is the title. That's okay. What shifts. The ancient was the Sorcerer Supreme for I think one of the longest runs,
right?
And then passes it down to him. Okay. So there's kind of like a cabal. I was looking at some main enemies. Mordo's the biggie, and we'll get into him a little bit, how the movie differs from his origin.
Because, I mean, he starts out really as his friend.
Yeah, and I like actually what the movie did more, so we'll get into that in a second. Caselius, the villain in the movie, Mads Mikkelsen's character, I didn't remember seeing that. I don't know, I only read like 20 or 30, I read like six different runs, so I didn't get all of his characters, but...
Right.
What was it, Dormammu is that's probably his main villain.
Okay.
And actually one thing, well, I know because we differ a little bit on the ending, it mainly started, he's like the embodiment of like this dark dimension, and the first time he faces him, he outsmarts him and tricks him, and from then on it's kind of like a personal vendetta of Dormammu to get Doctor Strange. So that's like his main, that was a good introduction because he is like, he always sends minions and other agents and...
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think that Dormammu was a bad villain. I just think that there was a little anticlimactic.
Well, I liked it, but we'll, you know, I don't know, any spoilers.
I guess...
But the other big character I wanted was, one thing I noticed a lot was Wong.
Mm-hmm.
Who, I can't remember the actor's name. He plays, Kublai Khan and Marco Polo. He's been in other stuff.
Yeah.
He's a really good actor. And he was almost kind of a bit character in this.
Yeah. But he's like a comedic release, a little bit.
Yeah, but he's a bigger character in the comic. He's his he's actually really like his Tonto.
Okay.
Of like, he's got like this, you know, he's like his valet. And also another thing, Doctor Strange was super fucking racist. Most of the comics were. This one, it's all, like, all of the mysticism is tied to the Orient.
Yeah.
The original Ancient One looked like the Fu Manchu, like, stereotypical character of, like, the long robes and, like, the, like, 2-foot, like, whisker beard and...
Yeah, yeah.
Long nails and...
For the Ancient One?
Yeah. Like, it was... Because originally it was a guy, but... Yeah, it's all Asian is mysticism, and so it... as far as the race of comics go, it wasn't the worst, but it was more of just because it, especially if you want to talk about the negative portrayal of Asians in comics.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's no, it, especially Captain America, but it did, but it just, it kind of perpetuated the stereotype that if they're like, we need something mystical, the Orient, and even just calling it like the Orient, it's just, so Wang was kind of like his Tojo of the Asian assistant butler.
Orient's only okay if it's rugs.
Yeah. But so he, I think he's going to be a lot more prominent later on.
Yeah, I think so too. And Mordo and, you know, whatever. So his origin story, pretty much similar in the movie to the comics about, damn it, he was pretty a surgeon. Pretty much identical. So, yeah, I guess we get into that. It's like, so Dr. Stephen Strange is this... He's a little bit of a megalomaniac.
Brilliant neurosurgeon.
Brilliant neurosurgeon who gets in an accident, car accident, and loses, you know, most function with his hands, which he saw as, like, the most important, you know, thing.
You know, the steady hands of a surgeon.
Right, yeah. But, I mean, even more so, like, he, in the movies, pretty much his hands are paralyzed. Not even just, like, he's got a little bit of the shakes.
Well, yeah, they jitter. You know?
Yeah. So it seemed like it was a lot worse. They pull out all the, you know, like, scary medical devices to prop up his hands. He's got, like, a billion pins in them and shit. I don't know. I don't want that to happen to any part of me.
Yeah.
They should have had one of those gags where they, you know, wrap him all the way up like a mummy and they're talking to the wrong guy.
Undo it. Yeah.
And yeah. That could have been funny.
Might have undercut the seriousness of the tone.
Yes.
Yeah. Of your entire life.
It's a very serious part of the movie. It's,
you know,
just, hey, like,
but you know what? Different directors have different approaches.
Right. That's...
That's what Dickerson... That's wanted. That's what Derek... I always call him Dickerson. That's what Scott Derrickson was the director.
Right.
That's what he wanted. That's what he gets.
Right.
Oh, I'm just so saying serious. There's a lot of slapstick that could have happened.
Exactly. It could have been a Marx Brothers movie. You could have had Groucho come in with a cigar and the mustache. I don't know. Is he dead?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Are they all dead?
Probably. They gotta be.
Okay. Like, so, focus. Anyway, that's what brings him to Tibet.
Not Tibet.
It's not?
Well, that was the big thing.
I thought it was supposed to be Tibet, still.
It was. But that's one of the things that they changed for the movie.
Where'd he go?
I don't know.
Kathmandu.
I think it may have... Because one of the reasons they changed the ancient one...
Which, well, I thought, yeah, so they...
Because some people called it Tibetan. Whitewashing, but...
They threw a line in there to get away with it.
Oh, what, she's like, Celtic?
She's Celtic. Oh, okay.
Well, also, but...
I guess that's why she's so
pasty. But I also think it's progressive. Well, one, you know, but it was also a woman taking the role, which I think that's still a nice...
Right.
No, but also, she was
Tilda
fucking...
Tilda Swinton can be in any movie I would watch. I don't
care. And she was phenomenal in it. Yeah. It wasn't like... They were just like, oh, we really want a white woman to play this character. It's just she was an amazing choice of that character. She was probably one of my favorite parts.
I mean, the reason they put her in there was because they wanted people to see the movie. Like, you know, it's another big name. Sure, they could have had any, you know... good actor of Asian descent.
But they didn't even, you know, really... They didn't even really pitch... Well, Cumberbatch was the big draw because they didn't really pitch her a lot.
Right.
But the way... Her character of just... Because I was expecting it to be very staunch and regal, and it was, but she had so much more, like, lightness and almost... Like, she just kind of took the steam out of him a lot. It just her delivery of the lines were really very
flat.
But,
I mean, you have four, you know, top-billing actors... That would be top billing in any movie. Benedict Cumberbatch, Rachel McAdams, I'll butcher his name, but Chidiwai Ejiofor, and
I knew that was. I was like, he's gonna say it before me, because
Ejiofor.
He was amazing too.
Yeah, he was great.
Well, one of the reasons they changed it and they got some flack was because they changed his origin, and I think the fact that it's in Tibet because they wanted to cater to Chinese audiences,
right?
Because they saw it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Still current the rift of whether or not Tibet's a free state or part of China. The premier in any modern movie, if you want to make $1 billion, 200 million of that's coming from China.
Is that Tibet? Or is it Taiwan?
Yeah, that's the one.
Okay.
But they changed because he was originally Taiwan. They changed the locations and origin of several of the characters to cater to Chinese audiences.
Okay. Yeah.
And they've gotten every movie does this now. They and it's not, it's fine to be inclusive of other cultures and other audiences, but they pander.
Right.
Like the last Transformers was randomly in China for no reason. The I haven't seen it, but I've seen clips from the Independence Day sequel, and they have a Chinese pilot, and they like actively say like, China's been integral to the, you know, Human Defense Fund. What do you say? And
I watched like half of that movie. Oh, it's so bad.
And they just and
it looks so bad.
There was a moment in Iron Man 3 where they added 20 minutes of because he has his he has to have surgery, where they add in a Chinese character where it's like a Chinese surgeon who's the only one in the world that can do it, but they have Jarvis, but it's a different voice, and like everyone in the movie is like, what the fuck is this? Because they just added like 20 minutes for Chinese theaters.
Yeah. So is that the same thing they did in Ultron where they have the Chinese doctor?
No, that was just the character, because I think she's going to set up another. Her son might be an important character, but so yeah, it's fine to, you know. I think again, power to you to have more. But they most mod any blockbuster has to keep in mind the Chinese audience,
right? But also, it you could say so they did that in this movie, but they also didn't, because they took one of the longest running characters from the series in the Ancient One and made it a white woman instead of anyone of Asian descent.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, but hey, like I'll give it to them that like Celtics did dabble in like the mystical arts. So I mean, that's what that, you know, if you want to call it religion, is based on.
But I guess so. Yeah. So I get fast tracking the plot, because it's a very by the numbers. So he spends all of his money on every possible surgery and procedure he can find in the Western right. world. No one can help him. He finds a guy who was paralyzed, and now he plays basketball in New York.
Yeah.
And he finds Harlem. Him because he just goes by to every random basketball court, and he's like, "Are you Eddie?" Yeah. Oh, thank God! I've been to 30 basketball courts, and he's like, "Oh yeah, I went to this, you know, mystical place, and they taught me how to heal myself." And he goes there, learns the way of magic and interdimensions, and becomes a Sorcerer Supreme.
Well, I think a huge part of a huge theme was that's going to play into the movies going forward between Mordo and Strange and all the rest of the sorcerers, is that you are supposed to be using the magic for the right purposes and not use them for the wrong purposes. But where that line is drawn is like different for a lot of people.
Well, most of it, yeah, it's supposed to be because it's not, you know, like a Harry Potter type where like there's this whole culture of magic and everyone right, uses right. it. It's supposed to, especially for in the movie's version of Mordo, Chiwetel Ejiofor's character, it's always supposed to be reactionary.
Right.
They're always defenders because like it's interdimensional beings. So if someone tries to take over Earth or try to like cross planes, then you use magic as a reaction to prevent. It's just to maintain this balance. Right.
And it can never be for personal use, pretty much.
Yeah.
That's what I got from it. Because, you know,
It's pretty much always because like magic in any medium, books, it's always bound by its rules. We've talked because magic can literally be anything you want. Mm-hmm. So it needs either some form of cost, either be mana, energy, chi, whatever you want to call it. They right. didn't really have that, but
no.
Or it needs limitations of choice. And because they constantly talk about like, you know, these books are forbidden or you're not ready for this. Or
right. So then a big part of the movie is you have these forbidden books and all the magic inside of it is can't be used, which goes to the Eye of Agamotto, which also doesn't make a lot of sense because why is it there if you can't use it, if it's only bad, but it saves the day?
That's why, yeah. So some things I did really like about what they established for the whole... So some things they did that I liked that they kind of spent a lot of time focusing on for when he is learning the magic and culture. Mm-hmm. It's because I like all the... It almost kind of goes without saying, all of the characters, acting, and writing, pretty solid. He did... Because there's a lot of parallels between Doctor Strange and Tony Stark of just kind of like... And I think Cumberbatch made it the character a bit more his own. It's not just Iron Man on mushrooms.
Right.
It kind of is, but he, everyone I've talked to, because he is a bit, he's pretty dickish in this, because Tony Stark is a lot more charming.
But I think that, you know, the whole Tony Stark is more like proactively wants to be Iron Man, whereas Benedict Cumberbatch is like, I want my hands to work again, and I want to get the hell out of here.
Well, that's why, well, because I like that the protagonist isn't just, like, it's not a Chris Pratt where it's a super likable, charming, clumsy guy.
Right.
He's kind of a prick.
Yeah.
He's not overly the top, you know, he's not, like, but he's really arrogant, but justifiably, and there's always a great moment where, so Amy McAdams is a love interest of sorts, like, they used to date, and that's something I like. They didn't force a love angle.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't like end up, you know, proposing, or like it really wasn't about their relationship, which was nice that they could have a plot without there always being a love interest. But she's helping him after the injury, and I should have looked up the exact line, but he's like, you know, she's like, you know, you haven't lost everything,
or right,
like some things are still worth doing, and he's what, like, you.
Right, yeah.
And, like, but there, I think we even, like, I think I turned to you in the movie, because everyone, there's just one moment where he's just unrelentingly just a bitter asshole.
Yeah.
And definitely. I was really glad that was in there.
Yeah, and I feel like it's tough, because there's, like, that Me Before You movie where it's just, like, if you become a cripple in any way, and I don't know if that's the right term, but,
oh, yeah,
like, life isn't worth living. It's like, this guy can't be a neurosurgeon anymore, but he could totally watch TV, like, for 24 like, hours a day.
You know, the internet exists, man. Like, there's a lot of stuff out there.
Like, but, and you just can't do surgery. Like, you could go dig a hole. Like, your hands work.
But they did. But they did, I think, a good job of, like, what that means. And they did a pretty good job of, like, they didn't. There were a lot dumber ways to make this movie.
Because
they didn't have him overly arrogant. There wasn't. He's like, I'm the best. You know, he was prickish, but they clearly showed. But he also, like, you know, they showed him wanting to do this profession.
Yeah.
And they showed, like, you know, he's got a really fancy car and he's got like 30 different watches. And over the first third, you just see like all that going.
Yeah.
Like they don't have, like, they don't shut off his lights and give him like a final notice bill, but you see the apartment losing things. He's spending all of his money
trying to fix this.
He got a shitty beard, and that's a nice way to, like, a beard or pregnancy is always a great way to show time.
Yeah.
And so they use that. Couldn't get him pregnant because, you know, Hollywood.
Right. They're not there yet.
But one thing I did like was for the, they kind of, this movie could have been, it is a nice step and it is like a nice break from the other superhero movies.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted them to push it. I think they played it a little safe. I wanted a little bit more out there because the magic, again, they didn't really, they tried to like super, again, like, you know, I'm very critical of movies, and I'll be like that nerdy, annoying guy in the back who nitpicks everything.
Right.
But I'm willing to suspend my disbelief
for
the sake of the movie. But because this movie, they like bent over backwards to justify and explain magic, and you really didn't have to just say, how do I make shields? Oh, it's magic. Okay. I give you the fact in this movie, magic exists.
Right. Yeah.
Do with it what you want.
So.
Because she spent a lot of time talking about, and actually I did appreciate when they try to make sense of it, of like, you know, they don't just say like, oh, I said a spell and he heals, like, we commanded the cells to self-regenerate, or they talk about, like, you know, they try to make sense of it, because even with Thor, like, it's fucking Thor, and they're like on a rainbow bridge, and he's like, oh no, you call it magic, it's science, it's not,
right,
like, they wouldn't call Thor magic, so this, they kind of had to admit was magic, but I think they half-hearted it.
Yeah, because they were kind of like, it's your will, it's like, it's all about that. It's not so much, like you said, like reading spells and things happening. It's more like energy and using your energy and all that kind of stuff. And like taking the energy from nature.
And different dimensions existing, which is like not too far from like string theory of how like there might be like 11 different dimensions at any given time. We only perceive 3.
Yeah.
And so like it... I don't mind that it's rooted, but I feel like that, like, listen, like, guys, he's a fucking wizard with a cape. You got me. Like, I paid my ticket. Yeah. I want to see magic.
Like, I know what's going on, especially if you're a fan of the, you know, like, the Sorcerer Supreme line of comics. Like, yeah, that's what happens.
And that's only because this is, like, the first, or I guess since Ant-Man 2, or since, like, you know, Captain America, they haven't done a new character movie in a little while.
Yeah.
And because it's not just the character, that it's like a friend of mine, God, we, you know, we repeatedly referred to this. It's pretty much like Thor 2.0.
Mm-hmm.
Of you're introducing the character, but you're also really introducing the world more than anything else.
Yeah, because the whole like Asgard thing, and it's like,
and so this, the like, you know, interdimensional beings, and so that, they, that, you know, there's a lot they had to get done with this movie to keep it within the MCU. And I like that. But I kind of, one of my two, I didn't have a lot of complaints to this movie, but one thing I didn't like was the concept of time really wasn't like, once he gets to the monastery, I have no idea if he was there for a year, if he was there for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
It's just like a learning montage, and he, because like I get, they did a good sense of time with his injury of a couple months or weeks of him having the beard.
Yeah.
And then he gets to the monastery and he's learning, and I have no idea for how long.
Right. But I think a part of it is like his brilliance in like the real world transferred over here.
Well, that's one thing I did like too, is he wasn't, because they did say he had like a penchant for magic, but it wasn't like a, you're a wizard of like, he, I'm kind of past the chosen one moments. It was, what?
Right, like you see there's scenes of him like when he learns how to like split his ash, the,
well,
his,
the first like, thing he learned was astral presence. Projection was so yeah. He can like study at night.
Yeah, so he like never needs to go to bed and he's just reading.
Well, that was my favorite, one of my favorite lines in the trailer and in the movie was, he's like, you know, he's like, teach me. And he's like, you know, how do I get from here to where you are, talking to the ancient one? And she's like, well, how'd you become a doctor? He's like, years of practice and study. She's like, yep.
Yeah.
Like, you got to read a book and you got to, like, I like that it, I like it when the characters have to earn their accomplishment. It's not just like, yeah. Oh, I was born, I'm the 12th son of the 6th son, and I was born when Venus was waning, so I'm the Sorcerer Supreme now. I don't have to try.
Definitely.
But no, so I do like that they had him, like, literally learning, and I don't know if, and I kind of wish they did a little bit more, because the visuals were really impressive with, like, the trippy landscapes. And they did do things of like him making shields and a light whip, and that was cool. But I feel like there's a lot more I kind of wanted to, like, right, they didn't have a lot of creativity with what he could do. Like, he did the same three things.
At one point when he has to fight off like Mads Mikkelsen and his like minions, those are sorcerers who have been, you know, presumably studying this for years.
Yeah,
and he's just like, yeah, I can take him on. Like, he doesn't do it in style. But, like, he figures it out. The cape helps a lot. But, yeah. You know, it just seemed weird the way that he was able to, you know, take them on and actually have an effect and, you know.
Well, he was a little bit of a Mary Sue.
Yeah.
He, like.
Definitely.
But that's, it's a comic book movie.
Exactly. No, and
the protagonist totally is going to be able to take them. Yeah.
But the two things I struggle with the most, one is the ending, which we'll get to. And second would be just the, like, how the world of magic works, and I guess Mordo's distaste for anyone who uses it in a way that is against what he perceives to be the right way.
This was kind of another villain of the week of Mads Mikkelsen's Mordo. We'll get to
that. I don't even know what his name was in the movie.
Caecilius. Because I love Mads Mikkelsen.
Oh, he's great.
And he did a good villain.
I mean, Hannibal, when he plays Hannibal on TV, it's amazing.
Yeah, and he was a really good choice, and I was really excited to see him. And as far as villain, like, I feel like that's the one thing where Marvel's always kind of weak at, because like, they've had Loki really well, but I think one of the reasons Civil War was so great was because it really wasn't about the villain, it was about the heroes. They've never really... I just, for whatever reason, just never really made, like, a long-lasting villain that I want to see again.
Yeah.
And his, at least, especially compared to some DC movies, at least his motivations were clear.
Right.
And understandable. He wasn't just, like, this crazy maniac, but he believed that, like, you know, entering the world, you know, that chaos is just our perception of chaos. And, what you know, and that there's actually order within disorder. And by having Earth enter the fold of this one mega being, will reach true peace and immortality.
Right. And plus, he was like, I don't like the fact that the Ancient One tells us that we can't do this sort of magic, but basically the only reason why the Ancient One has lived for the last 400 years is because she's been using that magic to tap in to keep herself alive for that long. That's a little bit of a spoiler. It's a spoiler warning.
So we'll get into the ending now and some of the spoiler stuff.
Right. So basically, yeah, it's like, you know, at one point during the movie, Strange is studying and he finds out that he can, like, you know, like, make these fractal time, like, he can, you know, bring an apple back to life or something like actually, that after it's eaten.
That was actually that whole little scene that I really liked that.
That was a cool perception of the way that that magic should work. But apparently that's like dark magic. But then like at the same time, because I guess they're not supposed to meddle in, like they're not supposed to play God, you know? Things happen. They're supposed to fight against
and evil. It was a good throwaway line, but yeah, because they're like, because again, that's the magic. It has to have some form of cost to have tension. So if it's not energy and if it's not then it has to be risk.
Right. And I feel like a lot of the times that risk is like, if you use too much of it, it'll drive you crazy or something, you know.
It'll destabilize all time. And,
right, yeah.
And so they're like, don't mess with time. It could, you know, cause a destabilizing effect. And then at the end, he's like, ooh, are you going to do it? Like, it's like,
yeah.
You told me this would bring about the apocalypse. And I get that, you know, at the end, they arrive too late and the big baddie's already won and pretty much like the bomb has gone off. So he's like, well, fuck it. I got really nothing else to lose.
Right. And then like Wong, who's the guy who's supposed to make sure no one's doing this stuff, is like,
keep doing it.
Yeah. You know, you broke the rules a little bit, but you know, okay.
I think, yeah, the line's, I told you not to, but he's like, you know, but don't stop now. And it's a nice little throwaway. So that's, yeah, a little. And so, yeah, that's a big change. And I don't mind that. And so like we talked about this, you know, when you go from comic to movie, it's a different medium. So I, you know, they called it from the beginning. I don't mind that that's the time gem, because they have to.
That's fine. War. But the other thing is that
it doesn't really make sense that the Eye of Agamotto has to do with time dilation.
It kind of fell into that trap that a lot of these movies do, where that there's one scene in the beginning where he's playing with this time fractal magic, and they're like, "Don't do that. You could get stuck in a time loop forever." And guess what? How does he save the day? Creates a time loop.
It's almost like a movie setting up a premise.
I know, but it was like almost too.
You know, so what every Harry Potter does ever. Like every.
Do you want to talk about all the reasons I hate Harry Potter? Like, come on. Like, Harry Potter's for children.
I didn't mind that. It makes it. Yeah, but if they didn't introduce it earlier. That's
not a horrible thing, but I just feel like it was almost too, like, Deus Ex.
Well, but every Infinity Stone in every movie is the Deus Ex or the MacGuffin device that
and that's not a problem.
And that is a failing of the MCU so far, is that the Infinity Stone in almost every movie it's in does kind of whatever they want.
I just think that there wasn't enough explained about, you know, why magic had to be used in a certain way and couldn't be used to service other things, especially when it seems like most of the people who are using it in a way that services themselves. Like, when you look at the guy who he finds playing basketball, like, and that's another reason in the end, Mordo goes to that guy and kills him, right? So.
Or takes the magic.
Takes the magic away, basically.
But, yeah. All right, so we'll get to, because I want to end on Mordo, because that's one thing I really liked, and that opens up the discussion. Right. So the third act, you were really butthurt about it, but you were yelling at me in a theater. I got scared. And they could kill your mom in it, you'd still like it, you fucking fanboy. And I'm like, we're outside. Please, I just want to go home. I like that it wasn't just, you know, another beam in the sky, big final. I like that because he defeats
Dormammu
by putting him like in a time loop and adding the concept of time. And I like that it was a clever, cheeky thing, and it wasn't just another big fight.
Right, but at the same time, I just didn't really buy into the fact that he could figure that out on his own, like at that point where he was just like, I got it. You know what? I've only been doing this for like 3 weeks. When I'm going to put
that's
giant interdimensional being who can destroy my world, I'm going to put him in a time loop and trick him like I'm fucking Odysseus and he's a Cyclops. Like,
but I guess that kind of works. I guess that who said nobody, but, yeah. Well, some of that is diminished by the fact that he is a genius and he does have unique approaches, and he is, you know, they do kind of put like the concept that like the cosmos wanted him to be the Sorcerer Supreme, but it is a little eye roll of I hate it. That's like a freshman history student being like, hey, you guys know Hitler's alive? I think I know where Hitler is.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh wow, no one thought of that. It is a little, when it's a thought device or when it, I like that, a thought device instead of a plot device. Save that for later. Thank you, David. No one else thought of that.
Yeah.
Just there's like 10 Guardians.
Right. But the thing is, like, I don't really mind that that's how he saved the day. It just, and I have a tough time explaining myself when I talk about this because I'm like, because
he just gets mad and just screams.
Because it felt like the stakes weren't that high
for him. Again, it was the end of the universe.
Personally. Like, it didn't seem like it was, because usually when you're keeping these very,
well, I kind of like that it wasn't, well, I like that it wasn't too personal, because, like, it would have been super fucking, like, that movie would have been so worse if, like, Mads Mikkelsen, like, took Rachel McAdams and, like,
well, no, not even that, because I feel like, you know, he has the power now to, you know, get his hands back or whatever, and, you know, usually when you're trying to keep a, you know, a small scale movie and not make it too big, like maybe that would have, you know, like he could keep his life the way it was, or, you know.
Well, I did. So I do like a break that, like, one thing I really liked about Ant-Man was that it was a small personal story.
Right.
And I do like when not every movie has to be the end of the universe.
Right.
I think it worked a little bit better for this character because he is like the protector of the entire dimension. So his responsibility automatically starts a little bit higher.
Yeah.
So I think that he does kind of deal with more cataclysmic events.
Sure. And that's fine because he is pretty much the sole protector of that realm. Like, yeah. And that's okay. Just like Thor is to Asgard. And, you know, I guess you could say like Iron Man is to, you know, the Earth here. And, you know, all things stemming out of humanity, you know, is him and Captain America doing those kinds of things. They're not, you know, flying around in space saving other people, other places.
Yeah.
So something, though, that I read and put a bad taste in my mouth and just kind of threw me off was that, because I liked the way Dormammu looked, that it was kind of this, like, nondescript, like, kaleidoscopy folding pattern for his face or whatever.
I was reading something, he did, like, the motion cap acting that...
Yeah, so that was actually Benedict Cumberbatch, and that was his voice and everything like that, so... It's just job security. It's all about job security.
You got to play both sides.
Right. So then they can never fire you.
Yeah, you want a hero or a villain? I need two checks.
Exactly. So something that I read when I was, you know, getting ready for this in the limited research that I did do, not on the comic book side, was that, you know, Dormammu has always been portrayed as this, like, flaming head, like this head on fire in, like, a cloak kind of.
Yeah, he's like similar. A demon form.
So the sole reason that they didn't keep that was they were like, people have seen it before and we wanted to give them something they hadn't seen. It's like,
no, they haven't.
That's like if you were just like, I'm going to make a movie with Mickey Mouse, but this time Mickey's an alligator. Why'd you do that? Well, because people have seen him as a mouse for 100 years. I just figured they might want to see something new.
So it's, you're like, mad retroactively that they changed a character you didn't realize they changed till after you saw it?
Well, no, I'm just mad that they thought they needed to change things for the sake of changing them.
Well, I think, well, I don't know, well, because he works better as, like, a giant entity head for the movie.
Sure, and that's fine, but the thing is that if you start the movie where you're just like, we're going to flip everything on its head, it's like, this isn't something that needs to be flipped on its head because it's never been done before. This is a fresh new property that...
Because we talked about this, because even though he does have a strong following and he does have a unique tone and he's been in publication for 65 years or whatever.
Right.
He's not that big of a character. He's very underread and underreported.
Exactly. You know, maybe not in the comic book world, but when you're talking about the comic book movie audience, absolutely.
Yeah, because, well, again, he's in, like, you know, he's a founding member of the Defenders and the Illuminati, and, like, he does do these groups, but he's mainly his own.
Right. That's like saying, like, Namor is one of the biggest... No.
Yeah.
No. He has a very high position in the hierarchy of the Marvel Universe, but that doesn't mean people know who the fuck he is.
Right, that's what I'm saying as well, because most, you know, especially if you're reading early on, the way you get introduced to other characters is they, you know, you find one or two characters you like,
right,
and they'll often, you know, if they're on the Avengers, or you get exposed to other characters by them doing team ups, and he's not a very big team up character because he has his own
thing. Like, I forget, was it the original Civil War where they, so you have Tony Stark goes to the Sanctum Sanctorum in New York City, and they're like, we need Doctor Strange, and they're like, yeah, he's like busy,
he literally goes on like a meditation retreat because he's like, if whatever side I pick will win,
right, so he's just like, I'm gonna go on like a 6 month like
sabbatical.
Like,
they do that a lot whenever they do, like, for like whenever they do like a massive like big story for Civil War or for Marvel, they always have like a reason for Doctor Strange to like not be involved,
right, because he could fucking end it in a second.
Although, except for he's in Civil War 2 and he just like, he teleported people, but then he didn't really do anything else.
Yeah, I think that's just because he's almost like the Deus Ex, like...
When you have magic, it's kind of hard to keep it in perspective.
Yeah, it's like, I got a laser gun. It's like, I got magic. Like, I'll just make you disappear. You want to go somewhere else?
I'm going to turn the entire Earth into salt. What are you going to do? So I'll get into the recommendations in a minute because we'll wrap this up because I want to eat lunch very badly.
Yeah, we're going to go eat all-you-can-eat sushi, and I'm going to try not to eat all-I-can-eat.
It's in the name. You have to.
Yeah, I guess.
I'm going to eat all he can eat. But so one thing I did really like, and we talked about briefly for was what they did with Mordo.
Yeah.
So one of the things in Civil War, I think that the MCU version is a lot better. Mm-hmm. It makes a lot more sense. The character motivations are flushed out a lot more.
But I've actually been thinking about that a lot because the reason we probably both like it a lot more is because we're not basing it on 60 years of past stories. So when you have the first Civil War, a lot of people just shit all over, the reason for the law and whatever. But we're basing it, when you look at the Captain America movie, you're basing it off of the past, 12 movies that Marvel has made. And it's basically all the events leading up to the Sokovia Accords makes sense because it's right there. But when you're talking about the justification behind it in Civil War II, the comic runs, you're like, what are we basing this on?
Well, even if you expand it, I think, because I like it more than most, but that's just one of my go-tos of what they did in the MCU was actually better than what they did in the source material. Because there's a lot of clever and creative people working for the Marvel movies.
Yep.
So they, when they take artistic license, they can improve it.
Right.
And I think probably one of my favorite parts was Chiwetel's character, where in the comics, Mordo, he's a bit more thuggish. Mm-hmm. He's because they mentioned in the movie, you need his creativity and you need his strength.
Is he also black in the comics?
No.
So you got to watch out when you throw on thug.
Okay? Yeah,
because he's played by a black man.
He's brutish.
Okay.
He's brutish and he brings down property values.
Are you just saying British in a weird way?
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, he was always the muscle, and he, it was almost kind of because I saw with the animated ones and some of the comics, it's almost like a boot camp type thing. And he's always kind of it's always the boot camp scene of when they're climbing the wall and one guy kicks the other. So that's what Mordo was. And when he wanted to be Sorcerer Supreme, and then they picked the newbie, and he's like, fuck this, I'm a bad guy now. Because, you're not pure of heart. He's like, I'm evil now. And that was just always kind of gimmicky.
Right, and that's in the comic.
And in the movie,
yeah,
he's completely justified, and it's way more... So he's actually, he's pretty good.
But to a fault, maybe.
Well, yeah, because I think he's friendly with Strange, but he's not, mm-hmm. they get along, but he's clearly...
I would say he's more on Strange's side than the Ancient One is. He's let's keep him around. Well, I like him.
Yeah, but he's also clearly a very devoted servant of the Ancient One.
Yes.
They made that, they did that well, and they did that clearly of he has this utmost respect and devotion to the Ancient One.
Mm-hmm.
And when he finds out that, and all these principles they have, it shapes his entire life.
Yeah.
And then at the end, when he, not only does he learn that the Ancient One had been actively lying to him and using the dark dimension for magic, which is the cardinal sin.
Right. But also seems like a lot of people need to do it. And sometimes it's okay, which is also a commentary on everything.
Right.
So
absolutism. And yeah, but he was, but so I think he felt personally betrayed by the lies, and that was one thing. But then also now that Strange and Wong, they're totally okay with just abandoning all these principles. And he's like, no, this is what our entire society is built around. This is what we dedicate our entire lives to. It's I imagine
it's tough because he just saw somebody use it to save the world and use it for good. And he's just like, nah, I still can't get behind it. You guys do you, but I can't be a part of
this. But I think there's a strong argument of it worked this time, but that's...
Right, but I don't know. He kind of abandoned it real quick. He's just like, no, I can't be associated with this. Not like...
I think it's the mix of
who's he worried about pissing off at this point?
But also, and so he now, he's the anti-magician, and he wants to, and I like his post-credit of you know what's wrong with the world? Two new magicians, and he wants to remove magic that, you know, if we, since we choose to use it incorrectly, the best way to maintain balance is to not have it an option at all.
Right.
And I like that a lot. And he'll be a good reoccurring villain. But also, my friend and I were like, but the first guy you go to is the cripple guy?
Yeah.
Like, all he's using it for is to walk and wipe his own ass.
Yeah.
And you go to him, like, you can't put him at the bottom of the list.
Yeah. Like, maybe I'll get around to it, but, like, he's not really hurting anybody.
And, like, because, like, and he just leaves the guy, like, because the cripple guy, he, like, takes his magic somehow, and he just leaves him in the garage, and it's like, my family's not coming home till 5. It's, like, 2 o'clock. Like, it's a Saturday.
Yeah.
Can, like, you turn on the radio?
I haven't eaten lunch yet. I'm starving. Like, I can't even crawl. Like, none of my body works.
So the first guy, she's like, all right, that cripple's had it too good for too long.
Yeah.
So I'm going to, you got to work your way up. But, like, maybe save him for last.
Yeah.
But, so actually, so I skimmed through, because we like to end these on the reading.
Well, real first, though, I love the astral dimension fight in the hospital. Awesome.
That was good.
Yeah. That was a really cool.
That's another one where, like, because, like, the visuals in general are super impressive and, like, the dimension changing, but they used it in the plot. And, like, mm-hmm. as a device, not just like, hey, look, it's cool and trippy. Like,
yeah,
it was actually a pretty big thing.
Yep.
And ghosts are real, and it's Benedict Cumberbatch fighting someone.
Yep. Awesome.
So I read through, because he's got a long history, but one of the ones I really liked was The Oath. That's the one I was talking to you about. It's 5 issues. It's from 2006. And Wong gets brain cancer, and he has to find a cure, and then he has to decide. But, like, the cure can also be used to, like, cure off, like, almost any disease.
Mm-hmm.
And he can save it and, like, give it to doctors, and they can try to use it for humanity. So he kind of has to either maybe save humanity later on and let Wong die, or save right. Wong now and then maybe doom, you know, millions of people to die later on.
Yeah.
And that was, like, a really good, like, of, and not just, like, Doctor Strange story or just comic story. It was a really good narrative
yeah.
to begin with. So I'll leave that on a cliffhanger for what he chooses to do. And then Marvel Masterworks, Doctor Strange Volume 1. That's, like, a really good compilation.
Mm-hmm.
Doctor Strange Issue 60 to 62. That was the Montesi formula. That was one of the, that's one where, like we said, magic having rules. He gets, like, poisoned and magic hurts him.
Okay.
And he has to fight vampires. And but it was, so the vampire stuff was cool, but that was another, like, really good way of limiting his power.
Mm-hmm.
And then I read, last night, the, currently, or if you just want to get into the current stuff now, the Doctor Strange Way of the Weird Volume 1 started this year, and that's by Jason Aaron and Chris Bacallo, and that was really good. That's, like, the current run going on now, and I really liked it. Right.
And if you want to get into Doctor Strange now, like you said, just there's a new Marvel Now series that is starting now.
Yeah. Way of the Weird. Yeah.
Did you get that, though? Marvel Now? Marvel Now is back.
I get it.
Not Marvel soon, or then, or somewhere in the near future.
You're denying me sushi.
Marvel Now. So there's a lot of new Now storylines.
So what's our call sign now? Till next time.
Yep. Until next time.